Money Radio, thank you for joining us today, and it is a real pleasure to welcome Jake Bernstein. He is a senior reporter on the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists team. This is the group that broke the Panama Papers story in 2016 and went on to win a Pulitzer Prize for explanatory reporting. Not Jake Bernstein's first Pulitzer Prize, I should note. He won another one back in 2011. He has written for The Washington Post, Bloomberg, The Guardian, ProPublica, and Vice. And he has written a new book about the Panama Papers. It is entitled Secrecy World, Inside the Panama Papers Investigation of Illicit Money Networks and the Global Elite by Jake Bernstein. Secrecy World. Jake, thank you so much for joining us.
No, thank you for having me, Sinclair.
I think a lot of people hear about the Panama Papers and just recently the Paradise Papers, and they hear about this world of offshore tax havens, and they wonder what in the world is really going on. Can you give us some sort of an explanation of what has been happening and what is the secrecy world?
Yes, absolutely. The secrecy world is actually, I wish that it was a phrase that I had come up with, but I didn't. It's something that I found in the Panama Papers, and the Panama Papers were well in excess of 11.5 million documents that were leaked to originally a German newspaper in Munich called Süddeutsche Zeitung, and Süddeutsche Zeitung then shared it with the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, which includes investigative journalists all over the world. So I was going through the documents. I was part of the original team with ICIJ going through these documents. And I came upon this incredible glossary of offshore terms. This had been written by a junior employee of Mossack Fonseca. And what made it so fantastic was that a senior lawyer had gone through the documents and deleted the places where the original author had been a little too candid, you know, a little too truthful. So, and you could see it. It was all plain as day right there, the miracle of track changes. So, for example, in the entry, aggressive tax avoidance, the lawyer had removed the phrase uncertain legality from the definition. But so toward the end of the document, I came upon the term secrecy world, and the definition read in part, the secrecy world encompasses the unregulated market and all those who create and promote secrecy jurisdictions and what they offer. So we can unpack that. What does that mean? That's tax havens like Bermuda or the Bahamas, the Cayman Islands, the British Virgin Islands, Jersey, places like that. That's lawyers who do family planning and encourage people to use trusts and foundations and anonymous shell companies. It's accountants and bankers who set up secret bank accounts in places like Singapore or Dubai or Switzerland. So it's this whole sort of infrastructure that exists to, you know, create anonymity, to create secrecy, and often it's completely legal, and there are justifiable reasons why someone would do this. For example, you want to do things, but you don't want your business partners to know that you're doing certain transactions that don't have anything to do with them. Or, you know, this might be morally questionable, but certainly legal. You have a mistress, and you want to use an anonymous shell company to secretly buy her something, like an apartment or a car, something like that. Or if you live in a place where there's high crime and you're worried about being kidnapped and you don't want that, you know, precise information about what your assets are to be out there publicly so that the kidnappers know what to ask for. So those are sort of areas where it might be justifiable to have this. But oftentimes it is used to evade taxes or to launder money for criminal activities or, you know, things like that. So the problem is that because it's all secret and non-transparent, it's very hard for governments and other people to really be able to tell the difference. And there's massive amounts of money that is going through this. So I think the estimate is just individually worldwide, it's something like $2.5 trillion is flows through this offshore system every year. You know, the United States, by one estimate, loses $70 billion a year in tax revenue just from corporations shifting profits to tax havens. So it's a mammoth problem. And you know, most people think, well, okay, that's nice, but it doesn't really relate to me. You know, why does this matter to me? And it matters because property prices, for example, are skyrocketing in New York, in Los Angeles, in Miami, probably in Phoenix. And part of this is foreigners using anonymous offshore companies to buy property in these big cities as investments. They're not necessarily living there. And sometimes that's fine, and sometimes it's the product of a tax evasion or money laundering or corrupt officials, and it's very hard to tell what is what because it's all anonymous. Another sort of manifestation of this is that, you know, the government does not have enough money for infrastructure, for healthcare, for police, for things like that. And part of that is because there's just rampant tax avoidance going on and tax evasion by corporations and wealthy individuals.
You mentioned some of the places where these shell companies are set up. You talk about the places like the Cayman Islands, Isle of Man, Luxembourg. But really, one of the biggest places where these corporations are created, Delaware.
Yes, that's such a good insight, Sinclair. You're absolutely right. Delaware gets more than $1 billion a year from its business registry. You know, and that's all ginning out, you know, these anonymous companies. And the State Department and others have complained bitterly about this because these companies, Delaware companies, have been used by Russian mafia and transnational criminal gangs and for all kinds of bad things. And other countries say, look, United States, you know, you complain and penalize us for as tax havens for doing this kind of stuff when you're doing it just as much. You know, it's not just Delaware, it's Wyoming, it's Nevada. I mean, one of the stories that I tell in my book, Secrecy World, are about bearer shares. Bearer shares are extraordinary things, right? They're actual certificates, pieces of paper. And whoever physically holds the piece of paper owns the company. And this is something that governments hate, right? Because it's tailor-made for money laundering, right? If I have a company and the company has, you know, assets of property or bank accounts or things like that, and I just give you the bearer share, the piece of paper, the certificate, then suddenly you own the company and there's been no trace of this transaction. So over time, due to pressure from, you know, the United States and other places, they have clamped down on this. And, you know, jurisdictions have either outlawed them or put them under custodianship. And what that means is that the bearer share, the certificate, goes into a safe in a lawyer's office or a banker's office, and that lawyer or banker has to know who actually owns it, right? And what's amazing about the Panama Papers is you can see how this system sort of reacts and evolves over time. So, for example, the British Virgin Islands clamps down on bearer shares, and you can see a spike in incorporations of companies in Panama where they still allow it. Well, today, there are only two jurisdictions in the world that allow bearer shares. One is the Marshall Islands, and the other is Liberia. This is the incredible part. These two jurisdictions, you know where their public registries are based? Not in the Marshall Islands and in Liberia, but in Virginia and New York City. Mm-hmm. So this is actually being run out of the United States. And this is one of the things that the people behind the law firm that was, you know, where all these documents came from, Jürgen Mosek and Ramon Fonseca were the founders. The law firm was called Mosek Fonseca. They complained bitterly that, you know, people beat up on the BVI and on Panama, but in fact, the United States and the United Kingdom are the biggest players in this business, and they're the ones that really set the rules.
And this has been a business that has been supported by global banking along the way, because somebody has to accept monies from these shell corporations. You would think that the global banks would have some obligation to know their client.
It's interesting. I mean, in Switzerland, they did know their clients. You know, generally they knew their clients and even helped them set up anonymous companies. But what they wouldn't do, and because in part it was literally written into the law, it was a crime for Swiss bankers to reveal any information about account holders. And that law, that same kind of law exists in Panama and exists in other places. Now, that has been broken down over time. I mean, now the Swiss will cough up the names of account holders if there's enough pressure brought to bear on them or if they believe that there's illegal activity going on. But if you're wealthy enough, if you're the uber wealthy, there are ways around that. So, for example, the Swiss bank might have a branch in Singapore, and they might say, listen, you can't have your money here in Geneva anymore, but we'll move it to Singapore. And then when the United States comes asking, we'll say, no, we don't have any Geneva account holders that fit that bill because the money is actually in Singapore. Or another jurisdiction that has become a go-to place in recent years because it is even more opaque than other places is Dubai. So this system is like a living organism. It sort of moves and adapts to continue its existence.
This has been such an incredible piece of investigative journalism. We should talk just a bit about the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, which broke the Panama Papers story almost 2 years ago. And at the time, the big player in the Panama Papers was the Panamanian law firm Mossack Fonseca, which has a very dubious history as well. And you just kind of wonder why these places exist and how is it that investigative journalists could find out this information, but apparently taxing authorities around the globe were unable to dig it up.
Boy, those are really good questions. Mossack Fonseca, this Panamanian law firm, had been in this business since the 80s and actually individually even before that. And they had their model was sort of fascinating. It was, they kind of aspired to be the McDonald's of the offshore world, right? Low cost, high volume. And they literally pumped out more than 240,000 companies over the lifetime of the firm. You know, I spoke to a former IRS agent, several former IRS agents, and they were aware of Mossack Fonseca's activities, but they were fearful of going after them in part because they were lawyers, you know, and they were worried about sort of being challenged on attorney-client privilege, which many people think is bunk because they weren't actually involved in legal activities. But they were also, you know, it's hard to get this information. You know, the tax havens themselves won't provide it generally, even to the U.S. government, which is understandable. The U.S. government doesn't really provide information to other countries either. So there's not a lot of trust there. You know, it really takes a leak of information to be able to crack this nut. And that leak of information happened to come to this German newspaper, Süddeutsche, which shared it with ICIJ. And ICIJ had already done several leak investigations in this area. And through those earlier leak investigations, they kind of learned how to do this model. They perfected it, you know, how to do this incredible collaboration across countries and across languages. I mean, ICIJ set up for us, not only did they make 11.5 million documents searchable, which in and of itself is an extraordinary feat, they put it online in a completely secret place and made it accessible to all these journalists. And then they set up like a separate kind of Facebook page for members of the project where we could share our findings with each other. And we broke it into sort of categories. So there was a Russia category, or, you know, there was a U.S. category, different things.
Hang on just a moment, Jake. We'll take a quick break. And I want to find out about where this actually leads, not just the Panama Papers, but the Paradise Papers. We're talking with Jake Bernstein, author of Secrecy World, amazing new book. Secrecy World by Jake Bernstein. We'll continue in just a moment. Our guest today, Jake Bernstein, he is the author of a new book, Secrecy World, Inside the Panama Papers Investigation of Illicit Money Networks and the Global Elite. Jake Bernstein is a winner of the Pulitzer Prize for his work on the Panama Papers, as well as other work before that. He's won a couple of Pulitzer Prizes. But I think the Panama Papers investigation may be one of the best examples of investigative journalism that we have seen in a long, long time. We talk about the Panama Papers, the Panamanian law firm Mossack Fonseca. There was a follow-up in November of 2017 dealing with Appleby, a Bermudan law firm. The Paradise Papers, the Panama Papers really uncover an incredible system where money flows undetected. And we know that a lot of this money at this point has gone for bad purposes. We know this for many reasons, including tax avoidance, tax schemes. We know that it has had a profound impact on some banking. We know that it's had profound impacts on governments, including Argentina, including Brazil, and the Lava Jato investigation of bribery and corruption in that country. We know that it reaches as well into the United States at this point, which is a major supplier of shell companies that are part of this whole global tax evasion scheme and secrecy world. There's corruption in the United States that's part of all these papers, is there not?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's Mossack Fonseca seemed to attract a healthy contingent of American criminals. I mean, there was the largest one of the players in the largest mortgage fraud in Alaska history, for example, a number of other sort of criminal elements, Ponzi schemers and scammers of different sorts that found their way to Mossack Fonseca. And then with Appleby, it's much more high end generally. So Appleby had more Americans than Mossack Fonseca did. They had more than 31,000 American clients. And a number of these people were quite influential. Wilbur Ross, the Secretary of Commerce,
yeah.
Major Democratic and Republican donors, a lot of corporate clients. You know, and these are people who maybe not necessarily were doing something illegal, but just because it's legal doesn't mean that it is proper. You know, they were using these structures to hide their activities and to avoid taxes.
This is an amazing story. And as you say, the implications do affect just everyday people. It affects us in the taxes that are not received by our government. It affects us in the services that are then not provided to the population. And it's not just individuals. It's not just a Wilbur Ross or a Paul Singer, or for that matter, even Queen Elizabeth. It's major corporations, and we are talking an enormous sum of money that is just kind of disappearing into the ether, if you will. There has been, I think, no better book to explain this than Secrecy World, Inside the Panama Papers Investigation of Illicit Money Networks and the Global Elite. We've just barely touched the surface here today, Jake, but the book digs into it in great detail and with a whole lot of information that is just remarkable. It's an eye-opening book, and I think everyone should read it. I think it will have profound implications moving forward, even if we haven't seen too much breakdown yet in this country. We have seen in other parts of the world. Secrecy World by Jake Bernstein. Inside the Panama Papers Investigation of Illicit Money Networks and the Global Elite. You got to read this one, Secrecy World. Jake, thank you so much for joining us today.
No, thank you, Sinclair. I appreciate it.